This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, September 6, 2022. I'm Caleb Brown. Liz Truss is the new UK Prime Minister. Who is she? What should we expect as she attempts to grapple with some of the major challenges facing the UK in the coming months? Cato's Ryan Bourne comments.
Americans probably aren't super crystal clear in general on the process of selecting a new prime minister. What does that process look like?
Well, it's been a pretty torturous process, and I think most people involved in UK politics are sick of it at this stage. Basically, what happened earlier on in the summer is that over a number of weeks, Conservative members of Parliament, in essence, forced Boris Johnson to resign. A lot of them called for him to leave, a lot of backbench members of Parliament. And then after that pressure ramped up, there were a number of high-profile resignations from his cabinet, which made his position untenable. Now, what that did is triggered a process within the Conservative Party to find a new leader. So first and foremost, you're trying to find a new leader for the party who then, as the leader of the majority in Parliament, can form a government with them as Prime Minister. So the way that essentially that worked is anybody within the MP cohort could put themselves forward. 11 people declared. They needed a certain number of supporters to be ultimately nominated. 8 went forward to the nomination. And then they went through successive rounds of voting just of Conservative MPs, with the lowest person in each round, the lowest candidate in each round, eliminated, and then a fresh vote. So in essence, you could kind of cycle your votes to different candidates after each round. Now, once that got to 2 remaining candidates, that then set a runoff with the ultimate vote determining who would succeed in this, determined by Conservative Party members, ordinary Conservative Party members throughout the whole country. So that process has been what's gone on in the last 7 or 8 weeks.
Now, who is Liz Truss?
Liz Truss is, at this stage, quite an experienced female politician in the UK. She's been Trade Secretary, she's been Chief Secretary to the Treasury, she's been Foreign Secretary, so kind of Britain's representative for foreign policy. She's a 47-year-old who, before she went into government, was very active in forming a cohort amongst Conservative backbench MPs called the Free Enterprise Group, trying to push for restrained public spending, low and simple taxation, proportionate pro-market kind of regulation. So she's always been quite an overt free marketeer and quite outspoken in favor of pro-market policies, even within government. And she decided to run this time, and now she's been kind of victorious and will become the new prime minister.
How do prime ministers, obviously Liz Truss has been an MP and is at least on paper and with her spoken words fairly conservative. How does that change once you become prime minister? Because it seems like it happens almost every time.
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, to win this election, you've got to win the votes of ordinary Conservative members. And then when you're Prime Minister of the whole country. So naturally, you kind of moderate in the tones that you speak in. But one of the things that she said is that she will govern as a Conservative. That said, the UK Conservative Party is a bit different to people who would self-describe as conservative, say, here within the Republican Party. She was recently asked a question on the abortion issue, for example, and whether she would allow the people of Northern Ireland to determine their own abortion policy. And she rejected that outright and said, no, I believe in the existing policy and I believe it should be the same throughout the UK. So there isn't that degree of social conservatism that you perhaps see in the US. But certainly the way that she's spoken about a whole range of things on the economic side has been fairly traditionally Thatcherite, at least in tone. We can argue about some of the details over taxation or borrowing or the like, but, she has campaigned on those kind of traditional conservative Thatcherite principles, at least.
And on Brexit, regulation, and trade, careful listeners will note that Liz Truss was on the Cato Daily podcast a few years ago when she visited the Cato Institute. Where is she on those issues?
Well, she actually, interestingly, campaigned as a Remainer. So she was part of the official Remain campaign in 2016, but soon realised after the vote had happened that what was really important was that the country tried to make the best of it. And she thought the optimal way to do that was to use the newfound freedoms that had been the policy levers that had been repatriated from Brussels to try and liberate the UK economy as much as possible. As Trade Secretary, she got the ball rolling on now ultimate agreements with Australia and New Zealand for fairly extensive free trade deals. She proposed, and I believe the UK is still in the process of applying to join the TPP, or at least the CPTPP, I think it's called now in its new iteration. And certainly, the way that she's been talking on the campaign trail is that she wants to diverge from the kind of Brussels precautionary model on lots of regulation, whether that's of tech, whether it's of GM foods, or a whole range of other kind of issues. She really does want to diverge in a more liberal direction.
Well, and that doesn't separate her necessarily from the bulk of the Brexiteers.
No. Weirdly, even though her opponent in this contest, Rishi Sunak, campaigned for Brexit, he's been held up as a kind of establishment Remainer candidate, and Liz Truss has been backed by most of the more prominent Brexiteers, from Lord Hannan through to Jacob Rees-Mogg and some others that your listeners may have heard of.
She is inheriting a pretty dire situation in a lot of areas in Great Britain, probably the most pressing of which is energy prices in the coming 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. If you look at the UK has a very fairly complicated regulatory model around energy, but if you just look at the kind of price that an average family might expect to pay for energy bills, it's gone up over the last few months and will go up by 80%. So talking about maybe $2,200 a year up to $4,000 a year from October, and then projected to go much, much higher still after that. So it seems inevitable, given how many families are going to kind of struggle with that, and businesses as well, that there'll be some sort of short-term government support package. But of course, we don't know how long this energy crunch is going to continue, and it's going to take a fair amount of time to get new supply on board. I think her government is going to have to be very careful kind of not to overpromise that this kind of support will continue. And it'll be important to do it in a way, if they are going to, give households money, it'll be important to do it in a way that actually maintains the price signal, because you want people to change behavior to a certain extent and, invest in better insulation of their homes and kind of cut back on unnecessary use. You don't want to impose kind of price controls. Otherwise, that could really distort a whole bunch of activity in the economy.
What does a Liz Truss government, what opportunities does that present for the United States of America in terms of liberalization of that relationship?
Liz has always been very, very keen on a US-UK free trade deal. It seems as if that's off the table to a certain extent at the moment, mainly because the US side is, under President Biden, is not particularly interested, and has at least used the kind of excuse, I guess, of the difficulties that Britain has had with the EU over the Northern Ireland issue as a kind of precursor not to engage with the UK in extensive trade talks right now. Liz, when I've spoken to her, has always been incredibly keen on the US as a country. She thinks it's incredibly entrepreneurial and dynamic. But I think she's fairly hard-headed about the US-UK relationship. By all accounts, there was a Financial Times piece recently which suggested that in a few meetings with senior US government officials, she kind of said, we talk about this special relationship that we have as two countries, but I don't see much evidence of it in the way that we're being treated with these particular tariffs in the past, or the way that we're negotiating this regulatory issue. So I think she's fairly hard-headed about the relationship. She's certainly she certainly believes that the UK and US have significant shared interests. But, I don't think she's under any illusions that there are many issues on which, unfortunately, a kind of perceived national interests preclude against good kind of sound free market economics.
What on her agenda that, you know, you find agreeable with respect to economics are going to be a hard sell to the rest of to Parliament?
There's a whole range of different regulatory issues which in the past she's suggested are very important for UK development or UK growth, should I say. One that she's talked about is the need to liberalize the land use planning system, which is incredibly constrictive, particularly around areas of the country that are most dynamic and productive. That tends to be opposed by lots of Conservative members of Parliament because reform would lead probably to significant house building in their constituencies. So she's going to have to navigate that issue, and it might be that she has to take a much more kind of strategic, fine-tuned approach than suggesting kind of blanket changes to planning laws. There's the issue of at the moment there is no permitting in the UK for fracking of natural gas, despite there being a lot of natural gas supplies. Now, some of that is due to the fact that in the UK you don't have property rights to everything below the ground that you own. And I don't think that will change anytime soon. But it may well be, if this energy crunch continues, that the country perceives that they need to engage in fracking. Now, that will come with significant local opposition. So you've got to devise some sort of policy that shares the gains, that incentivizes areas to be willing to accept that. So there's all sorts of small regulatory issues, which I think she would instinctively be a supply-sider on, that are going to be quite tough sells to some of her backbench MPs.
Ryan Bourne occupies the R. Evan Scharf Chair for the Public Understanding of Economics at the Cato Institute. Please give a rating to the Cato Daily Podcast on your podcast platform of choice and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.